In an article in the Otago Daily Times, University of Otago International Relations Specialist says that the government of New Zealand is behaving irresponsibly by not bringing New Zealand jihadist Mark Taylor home and to account. Professor Robert Papman says that with the release now of prisoners post-US withdrawal from Syria's northern border, the likes of Mark Taylor and others, hardened jihadists, would be able to regroup and reignite the activities of terror. This being on the back of the US withdrawal in the area, leaving a vacuum that allowed Turkey to launch an assault on the Kurds, who are widely considered the spearhead against ISIS in the region. Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has previously said Taylor would receive no assistance from the New Zealand government. So before we go to Professor Papman, Peter, what do you make of this? And here, maybe put your Amnesty International hat on. The US has urged countries, including New Zealand, to repatriate their citizens who joined ISIS, but our government remains reluctant.
I mean, firstly, we've got a long history of extradition within our country. So, you know, with those New Zealand citizens who have committed a crime overseas, they're either, you know, prosecuted under the laws of those countries, or they've extradited home to be prosecuted. And any criminal or alleged criminal, who takes an act against other human beings, against humanity, against society, should also be fully prosecuted under the law of New Zealand. The challenge that we've got in New Zealand is that this would be the first of its type in terms of bringing charges under our current terrorism acts. I think that's the concern for most people. And I think if you were to get a couple of lawyers on there, they'll say the same thing. So you've got the legal fraternity or the justice system sort of rolling, trying to adapt our current laws to a citizen of our country who's coming back to New Zealand to be prosecuted under what will probably be anti-terrorism laws, and also then go and then having to satisfy a certain threshold, because of course you know the social media accounts show that he's a supporter of, not a participant.
So not even meet the threshold.
And then you've got the political issue that comes with that, where you've got a citizen with those ideas who you're bringing back into the country. So, and it's unlikely to be de-radicalised like other countries have, where other countries have de-radicalisation programs. So this is a whole new field for New Zealand: justice system, police system, intelligence system, human rights system as well. So it's a careful one, and I can see why like people like the Minister of Justice is sort of carefully looking at it. However, it's
No easy answers.
There's no easy answer, and I think that's the challenge for any government of the day, where you've got a citizen who you need to be back.
Well, here's an easier way to think about, because a lot of Kiwis would say, look, you know what? He made his own way there. He can make his own way back. There isn't a lot of compassion out there for the New Zealand jihadi. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. I don't have an extraordinary amount of compassion for him. Like, I don't even... If you think about the more pressing issues that are happening at home right here, right now, I don't have a lot of sympathy left for him in that sense. I'm not going to expend a lot of energy fighting for this.
And nor his family. His family has disowned him as well. And that's the other part of bringing such a citizen back into New Zealand as well. So it's difficult, but at the end of the day, he's a citizen of our country, in which we need to prosecute as part of our own legal system.
Before we go, or have they disowned him? I'm just trying to think, weren't they supporting him? Maybe I can clarify that a bit later on. But anyway, we're with Professor Robert Papman from the University of Otago. Professor Papman, welcome.
Oh, good afternoon, Wallace.
Yeah, so look, you say it's irresponsible. In fact, you say it's doubly irresponsible to leave him there. How so?
Well, I think it's not a question of compassion to bring him back to New Zealand. Let's be quite clear about this. We joined an anti-ISIS coalition back in 2014, we contributed troops which trained Iraqi forces against the ISIS threat. And we have responsibilities as part of that coalition. Now, I said back in March, before the Christchurch atrocity, that this guy needs to be taken out of circulation. I mean, you know, this guy, it was part of an organization. He may not have been, we don't know to what extent he participated in the atrocities, but the organization which he belonged to is a criminal organization which murdered Syrians, Kurds, and Iraqis in large numbers and sometimes in the most hideous circumstances. And, you know, when it became public that when the Kurds basically first asked the New Zealand government to take this guy back, we heard all these populist noises like, oh, we don't want him back. We've got, you know, no compassion. And, you know, he's made his own bed. He must lie in it. And Kiwis don't really care about this. Well, actually, we do care because we joined a coalition. We do care about blunting terrorism. And we do care about preventing these sort of atrocities occurring in the world. And we doubly care after what happened at Christchurch. So this guy really should be brought back as quickly as possible. We have, and we still have 95 troops in Iraq. He should be put on the first plane back and face the full rigor of the law. Now, I take the point there are legal complexities, but nevertheless, I do think he should not be. We're now in the absurd situation where our government's divvied, and now he will probably be free to resume his activities of creating mayhem and possible atrocities in the Middle East. And this is not a good look.
Right, so you're saying that the government of New Zealand really is dithering on this issue?
Well, yes, we seem to be saying, oh, yes, on the one hand, we're meeting our responsibilities under the Geneva Convention. He is a Kiwi citizen, but we're not in a hurry to bring him home. If he can make his own way to Ankara and get himself on a plane, we'll deal with him. But, you know, there's a big false assumption here. That is that this is a soft option of bringing him home. It's not a soft option. He needs to be taken out of circulation so that he's not free to commit atrocities anywhere or contribute to an organisation that is. He needs to be brought back under the Terrorist Suppression Act and tried in the most rigorous fashion. And also, he's not the only Kiwi who has volunteered to participate in jihadist organisations. So it's important that we look in the eyes of other countries, businesslike, and, you know, we have a powerful strategic reason and diplomatic reason for dealing with this in a very businesslike and professional fashion.
Hey, while we have you here, I mean, this news of the US withdrawal is really big news internationally. I mean, front page of like the likes of The Guardian and BBC. I'm just looking at the New York Times right now. It's really big news. So on that note, what of the vacuum that the US is leaving? Reading The Guardian today, they note that the real power shift was between Washington, whose fighting troops have all but left the region 16 years after invading Iraq, and Moscow, whose reach and influence now is across the US, across the Middle East, and that's now been cemented. What's your take on it?
No, I think that's a bit of an exaggeration. I think what has happened is that both Mr. Obama and, to a greater extent, Mr. Trump have reduced America's involvement in conflicts in the Middle East. And the one foothold that the Russians have is in Syria. And basically, they've extended that. It was very irresponsible what Mr. Trump did, which was essentially give the green light to the Turkish incursion in northern Syria. Mm. So they can pursue their number one enemy. The Turkish government of Mr. Erdogan always made it clear their number one enemy was the Kurds, the Syrian Kurds who fought in the SDF, who actually did the lion's share of the fighting on behalf of the anti-ISIS coalition led by the United States. They did the bulk of the fighting against ISIS and played a key role in defeating ISIS. And now the United States has turned its back on the Syrian Kurds. So that, I think, is, you know, it highlights the fact that we have very few mechanisms internationally in which nations which don't have statehood can transition to statehood. And at the moment, they've just been abandoned by everyone, it seems to me.
Professor Robert Papman, University of Otago, thank you very much for explaining and being on the show. It's quite tragic what's happening there, isn't it?
And with Erdogan, it's taken, I mean, he's been in power 16 years, and it's taken him 60 years now to sort of, you know, create a neo-Ottoman empire. So this is his opportunity. And as the professor said, you know, the Kurds were his number one enemy. He's, you know, taken a secular nation of Turkey and turned it into a, an Islamic state. And it's taken him 16 years, and he's got the opportunity. And of course, troops will be, you know, at the end of the day, those civilians will be the ones that will be killed and maimed and hurt through this. And we'll probably have another wave of Syrian, northern Syrian and Kurdish refugees coming out of that area.